contact with it less than 2 minutes after the first bomb fell.
Why didn't you mention that before, when I first told you about the rocket?
I had assumed that it was empty, that it went up in the air as a decoy. And I think that if one space station was destroyed, then the other was as well. Their trip, unfortunately, was probably done in vain, whatever their goal was.
But what if they came back when their supplies ran out? Do you think they could survive on Lorien? I ask in desperation. I already know the answer. I already know what Henri will say. But I ask anyway, in order to hold on to some sort of hope that we aren't alone in all this. That maybe, somewhere far away, there are others like us, waiting, monitoring the planet so that they, too, might one day return, and we won't be alone when we go back.
No, there is no water there now. You saw that for yourself. Nothing but a barren wasteland. Nothing can survive without water.
I sigh and scoot back down into the bed. I drop my head onto the pillow. What's the point in arguing? Henri is right, and I know it. I saw it for myself. If the globes that he pulled from the chest are to be trusted, then Lorien is nothing more than wasteland, a dump. The planet still lives, but on the surface, there is nothing. No water, no plants, no life. Nothing but dirt and rocks and the rubble of the civilization that once existed.
Did you see anything else?
Henri asks. I saw us on the day we left. All of us at the airship right before we took off.
It was a sad day.
I nod. Henri crosses his arms and gazes out the window, lost in thought. I take a deep breath. Where was your family during it all? I ask. My lights have been off for a good 2 or 3 minutes, but I can see the whites of Henri's eyes staring back at me.
Not with me. Not on that day, he says.
We are both silent for a time, and then Henri shifts his weight.
Well, I better get back to bed, he says,
bringing an end to the conversation.
Get some sleep.
After he leaves, I lie there thinking of the animals, of the rocket, of Henri's family, and how I'm sure he never got the chance to say goodbye to them. I know I won't be able to go back to sleep. I never can when the images visit me, when I feel Henri's sadness. It must be a thought constantly on his mind, as it would be for anyone who left under the same circumstances, leaving the only home you've ever known, all the while knowing you will never see the people you love again. I grab my cell phone and text Sarah. I always text her when I can't sleep, or she texts me if it's the other way around. Then we'll talk for as long as it takes to become tired. She calls me 20 seconds after I hit the send button. Hey, you, I answer. You can't sleep? No. What's the matter? She asks. She yawns on the other end of the line. Was just missing you is all. Been lying in bed staring at the ceiling for like an hour now. You're silly. You saw me like 6 hours ago. I wish you were still here, I say. She moans. I can hear her smile through the darkness. I roll to my side and hold the phone between my ear and the pillow. Well, I wish I was still there too. We talk for 20 minutes. The last half of the call is both of us just lying there listening to the other breathe. I feel better after having talked to Sarah, but I find it even harder to fall back asleep. Chapter 24. For once, since we arrived in Ohio, things seemed to slow for a time. School ends quietly, and for winter break, we have 11 days off. Sam and his mother spend most of it visiting his aunt in Illinois. Sarah stays home. We spend Christmas together. We kiss when the ball drops at midnight on New Year's Eve. Despite the snow and the cold, or maybe even in retaliation against it, we go for long walks through the woods behind my house, holding hands, kissing, breathing in the chilly air beneath the low gray skies of winter. We spend more and more time together. Not a day passes during that whole break that we don't see each other at least once. We walk hand in hand beneath an umbrella of white from the snow piled atop the tree branches overhead. She has her camera with her and occasionally stops to take pictures. Most of the snow on the ground lies undisturbed, aside from the tracks we have made on the walk out. We follow them back now, Bernie Kosar in the lead, darting in and out of the brambles, chasing rabbits into small groves and thickets of thorny bush, chasing squirrels up trees. Sarah wears a pair of black earmuffs. Her cheeks and the tip of her nose are red with the cold, making her eyes look bluer. I stare at her. "What?" she asks, smiling. "Just admiring the view." She rolls her eyes at me. For the most part, the woods are dense aside from sporadic clearings we continually stumble upon. I'm not sure how far in any one direction the woods extend, but in all of our walks, we have yet to reach their end. "I bet it's beautiful here in the summer," Sarah says. "We can probably picnic in the clearings." An ache forms in my chest. Summer is still 5 months away, and if Henri and I are here in May, we will have made it 7 months in Ohio. That is very nearly the longest we have ever stayed in one place. "Yeah," I agree. Sarah looks at me. "What?" I look at her questioningly. "What do you mean, what?" "That wasn't very convincing," she says. A mess of crows fly by overhead, squawking noisily. "I just wish it was summer now." "Me too. I can't believe we have to go back to school tomorrow." "Ugh, don't remind me." We enter another clearing, larger than the others, an almost perfect circle, 100 feet in diameter. Sarah lets go of my hand, runs into the middle of it, and drops into the snow, laughing. She rolls to her back and begins making a snow angel. I drop beside her and do the same. The tips of our fingers just barely touch while we make the wings. We get up. "It's like we're holding wings," she says. "Is that possible?" I ask. "I mean, how would we fly if we were holding wings?" "Of course it's possible. Angels can do anything." Then she turns and nuzzles into me. Her cold face against my neck makes me squirm away from her. "Oh, your face is like ice," she laughs. "Come warm me up." I take her in my arms and kiss her beneath the open sky, the trees surrounding us. There are no sounds save the birds and the occasional pack of snow falling from the nearby branches. Two cold faces press tightly together. Bernie Kosar comes trotting up, out of breath, tongue dangling, tail wagging. He barks and sits in the snow staring at us, his head cocked to the side. "Bernie Kosar, were you off chasing rabbits?" Sarah asks. He barks twice and runs over and jumps up on her. He barks again and pushes off and then looks up expectantly. She grabs a stick from the ground, shakes the snow off it, and then hurls it into the trees. He races after it and disappears from sight. He emerges from the trees 10 seconds later, but instead of returning to the clearing where he had exited it, he comes from the opposite side. Sarah and I both spin around to watch him. "How'd he do that?" she asks. "Don't know," I say. "He's a peculiar dog." "Did you hear that, Bernie Kosar? He just called you peculiar." He drops the stick at her feet. We walk towards home, holding hands, the day nearing dusk. Bernie Kosar trots beside us the whole way out, his head on a swivel as though ushering us along, keeping us safe from what may or may not lurk in the outer dark beyond our line of sight. 5 newspapers are stacked on the kitchen table, Henri at his computer, the overhead light on. "Anything?" I ask out of habit. "Nothing more." There hasn't been a promising story in months, which is a good thing. But I can't help but always hope for something every time I ask.